Beyond good, beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination.
Before we jump in the DeLorean here on TuneCast Beyond, I was going through the TuneCast Classic iTunes feed the other day, and I saw that on iTunes we have a new review. Amazing Work, a 5-star review left on April 7th, 2012 by WritingAddict169. I'm actually really sad that I never listened to this podcast until now. I would have loved to leave a voicemail. Anyways, TuneCast is an amazing show where the hosts know what they are talking about and prove that cartoons aren't just for kids. Granted, they get off topic at times, but honestly, we would all do that if we were on a podcast that has great chemistry between the cast such as this one. GCRN does an amazing work with everything that they touch, and I'm glad that this was my introduction to the network. Well, thank you very much. And now, I'm going to throw a bunch of people inside a couple DeLoreans. We'll be back after this.
I come from the net, through systems, peoples, and cities, to this place, Mainframe. My format, Guardian, to mend and defend. To defend my newfound friends, their hopes and dreams. To defend them from their enemies. They say the user lives outside the net and inputs games for pleasure. No one knows for sure, but I intend to find out. Reboot!
Hello and welcome to the 18th episode of TuneCast Beyond, brought to you by the GeekCast Radio Network. I'm your host, TF Joe and Mike, and today I am joined once again by Tara the Rising Star. Hello.
Hey, great to be back. Great to be here.
Yeah. And Steve Megabyte. Hello.
Hello.
You can't do Megabyte to save your life.
Nobody can do Tony J.
Don't even try.
Today we are going to be jumping back into the DeLorean for another TuneCast Beyond DeLorean Time episode with our heading set for 1994 once again, and we are going to be rebooting Mainframe. This episode of TuneCast Beyond will also serve as the episode zero for the brand new podcast that we'll be launching sooner rather than later. I don't know exactly when. We'll talk about that at the end of the show, but the brand new podcast here at the GeekCast Radio Network, Rebooting Mainframe, where Steve and Tara are going to go through in-depth all of the episodes of Reboot, but we wanted to do this first to just get an overall general discussion going about the series. As far as the overall history lesson, Reboot is the Canadian CGI animated action-adventure cartoon series that originally aired from 94 to 2001. Wow, it went that long. I had no idea. It was produced by Vancouver-based production company Mainframe Entertainment, Alliance Communications, BLT Productions. Hey, wait. Leave that lettuce out of that bacon and tomato. and created by Gavin Blair, Ian Pearson, Phil Mitchell, and John Grace, with the visuals designed by Brendan McCarthy. After an initial attempt by Ian Gibson, it was the first half-hour completely computer-animated TV series, supposedly. Reruns of the first three seasons can be seen in Canada on Teletoon Retro, and the first two seasons are available on Netflix streaming service in the U.S. All right, so I am actually going to... I'm going to give my thoughts first. I remember seeing this when it came out, and I remember thinking, why is Hasbro going this route for Transformers? I got this and Beast Wars mixed up. I don't know how the hell I did that, but I was 16 and I wasn't paying attention to cartoons then anymore that well. Going back and watching this series... I love all the voice acting in it, but I swear to God, it's the first Tron animated series. This series reminds me, and this is just my personal opinion. This isn't gonna, you know, this isn't. I know this isn't how Steve thinks, and I don't know about Tara, but to me, the whole time I was watching season one, I was like, oh, they're going to enter a game. Oh, hey, Tron is a game world. Oh, this. Oh, that. I was like, I kept seeing Tron references everywhere. I don't know. Honestly, I've only seen the first season. I just couldn't continue watching after that. It's a good series. It has a lot of good points, but it's just not my thing. It just isn't. So, Steve, what are your general memories of Reboot?
Well, to start it out, I do remember watching this before Beast Wars. So that got me interested in the 3D cartoon aspect right away. I used to watch this, and damn, I was young.
Yes, you are.
Yes. This was essentially one of the shows I grew up with, along with Beast Wars. So Mainframe back in those days, in my opinion, was fairly good company. They had a lot of good stuff coming out, and this was one of them. I enjoyed what little I remember of it from then. I loved Megabyte, which I think in turn caused me to like Megatron so much because of not only a similar name, but the dark portrayals and the almost like kind of English regal, you know, kind of weird evil. So I liked that, and then I liked the aspect of, you know, having this guy that's basically the antivirus for the, you know, kind of anti-spyware kind of thing, protecting everybody, and then the jumping in video games, which, you know, at that time we all know that video games were not as advanced as the games they were jumping into.
No.
So it was very mind-boggling for a kid of that time to see something like that, whereas now you can go see something like Avatar, and as much as I dislike that movie, 3D has come a long way.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Tara? What do you remember about watching this series?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm going to not say everything I want to say because then I won't have anything left to say for the actual Reboot podcast. Mm-hmm. But for what I'm going to say, when I think about Reboot, I think immediately about Megabyte. I think immediately about Hexadecimal. It's really more so the characters that I remember the most because growing up, watching this show when it came out in the mid-90s, my older brother is the one who really got me into it. And at that time, it was being shown, I believe, Saturday mornings and also late at night on YTV, which is youth television here in Canada. So I just remember watching the show, and really, I think at first, I didn't really, like Steve was saying, I didn't really understand it at first because, you know, maybe it was because I was young. And, you know, with technology changing so rapidly back then, it was kind of mind-boggling. But at the same time, it was really cool because the show just kind of, it had a way of just drawing you in episode by episode. Even in the first season, you kept wanting to watch more. And it had funny humor. It broke the fourth wall, which I loved a lot because not a lot of shows did that. And when it broke the fourth wall, it brought you into it. You felt like you were a part of the show. You felt like you were there experiencing everything the characters were experiencing. So that's what I really loved about Reboot. And also, I loved the fact that it was, you know, Canadian and it was becoming so big. And the other thing I kind of liked about it is, we'll get more into this in later seasons, but as time went on and they got more advanced technologically speaking, the content actually matured as well. So while the viewers were maturing, the story was maturing along with them, which I really liked because they broke, like, you know, with cartoons today, there's so much that's censored and so much that's taboo that we can't talk about on TV and or show on TV, but Reboot kind of, you know, it showed stuff, it exposed kids to violence, like, you know, some of the harsh realities of life, you know, of people getting hurt and stuff like that, and good versus evil, especially, you know, with Megabyte and Hexadecimal. I mean, those things that were brought into the open with the types of villains that they were and some of the things that they were doing. And that's what I liked about it, is because, you know, it exposed us to things that we probably wouldn't have been exposed to otherwise. And also just with so many of the references that were made in the show, with all the different, you know, outside stuff from movies, from comic books, from television shows, just all those little hidden references in the show just kind of made it like really cute and really entertaining to watch. And it was just awesome. I mean, Reboot is just, it's, that's why we're dedicating a whole podcast to it, because we can't say everything we want to say in this one episode.
Right.
that's how awesome it is. But yeah, that's my general memory, is just, you know, growing up with it and being, I think, enlightened by it and in awe of it. And at the same time, with some of the darker stuff kind of freaking me out. I mean, like with Hexadecimal, oh my God. like I said in Are You Afraid of the Dark with Telecast, yeah, that kind of gave me some nightmares with Hexadecimal. Until I got older that I wasn't afraid of her. But that's basically what I had to say on that. Yeah.
The only thing I'm going to say that really kind of, if I could bitch slap one character, it would be Enzo.
Oh, yeah.
I agree.
Oh, yeah.
Until he gets older.
Well, yeah, until he gets older. Because, I mean, I can actually, I don't know if you guys watch the show The Walking Dead.
No.
But for anybody out there who does watch The Walking Dead, Enzo can kind of be a test to Rick's son, Carl. Because Enzo tends to get himself into a lot of trouble, and he's always told to stay put and, you know, not get
never
into
does.
Trouble. Never does. Gets into trouble, so Bob and Dot have to end up rescuing him, which...
I don't know who's worse, Enzo or Scott Tracker from Mask. Ugh. Yeah, so getting into the characters, we're just going to talk about the main cast and the recurring cast, but there are a whole other bunch of characters as well. You've got Guardian Bob, voiced by Michael Beignet. Dot Matrix, voiced by Kathleen Barr. Oh, hey, look, it's Roll.
Hey, it's also the Predacon computer.
Yep. Enzo Matrix Young, voiced by Christopher Gray. Fong, voiced by Michael Donovan. Andrea Young, voiced by Andrea Libman. Megabyte, voiced by the incomparable Tony J.
Rest in peace, man.
Yes.
Miss you.
Enzo Matrix, voiced by Paul Dobson. Glitch Bob, voiced by none other than Ian James Corlett. And the older Andrea, voiced by Sharon Alexander. And, of course, Hexadecimal, voiced by Shirley Milner for the main cast. The recurring roles, we've got Hack and Slash, who are Rat Trap and Optimus Primal, respectively. Scott McNeil and Gary Chalk. Captain Capacitator. Wow, I guess I didn't get that far in the series because I don't know who that character is. Long John.
You're missing out.
Turbo by Gary Chalk. Cyrus was also Gary Chalk. Ray Tracer by Donald Gibson. Mouse by Stevie Valance. Mike the TV by Michael Donovan. Oh, that's not. And Cecil, also by Michael Donovan. I like Hack and Slash simply because it is essentially Optimus Primal and Rat Trap arguing in robot bodies. I thought that was kind of cool. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch to when they get to Glitch Bob, because I only remember the first Bob, Guardian Bob. So
Glitch Bob, I believe, is like season 3.
The later part of season 3, and then all of season 4.
Yeah. Steve, what are your favorite characters from Reboot?
Hands down, I'd have to say Megabyte, Bob.
Yeah.
The original and Glitch. Fong was a little weird, but he kind of reminded me of like an Alpha Trion.
Yeah.
Kind of sitting there in the background and. So, Hexadecimal, I never really cared for that character, but, and of course, you know, Hack and Slash, just because you had your comedic gold in those two.
Yeah. You know, for me, I just in the few episodes of season 1 that I saw, I'm like, why don't Megabyte and Hexadecimal just get married, for Christ's sake?
her siblings.
Well, something worse happens later.
Well,
yeah,
see,
I
this
know,
is
but a... they're siblings, Mike. Well,
they merge. They merge.
Talk about incestuous. The one thing about this show that really, actually, it's two things. It's not really about the show, but about one of the characters. I'm so glad that Joan Rivers did not voice this character, and I'm so glad that there were no polka references. I kept thinking of Dot from Animaniacs. Polka Dot? Why not? And then, of course, Dot Matrix from Spaceballs, who was voiced by Joan Rivers.
Oh, God.
What about you, Tara? What are some of your favorite characters from Reboot?
Hands down, my most favorite character is the Andrea, both young and old. Then I would have to say Enzo Matrix when he becomes Matrix, because I will admit I had a crush on Matrix because he's so badass looking when he gets older. Definitely my favorite villain, Megabyte, and Bob, and Dot. Definitely did not really care for Fong that much. Mm-hmm. Young Enzo, pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Hack and Slash, comedic relief right there. I love them. I hated Cyrus just because he's a little, for people who don't remember Cyrus, he basically screws over Dot in season one.
Yeah.
And he becomes Megabyte's lackey, and then when Enzo becomes the guardian, he tries to screw over Enzo as well. So he's a little bitch character. So I don't like him that much, but he's not seen that much, so thank God. Also Mouse, I have to say I like Mouse. I mean, the first time we see her, you don't really care for her, but later on when she comes back, she's a badass chick. She kind of reminds me of from Mass Effect. She reminds me of Jack from Mass Effect.
Yeah.
If I can make that comparison. And Mike the TV, oh my God. I'm just going to mention it because, I mean, the guy who, Michael Donovan, did such a fantastic job as Mike, but I mean, that character is just such a, he's so annoying. And I know that's the point of him, but oh my God.
Well, I like the waiter.
Yeah, Al? You mean Cecil. Cecil.
Yeah, Cecil.
Cecil.
Cecil, whatever.
Yeah, Cecil.
Where's Beanie when you really need him? Anyway, that's a bad old cartoon joke there.
Funny about Michael Donovan is he actually was in various Transformers cartoons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Beast Machines and Armada, Cybertron, Energon, GoBots. So
yeah. GoBots is not a Transformers cartoon.
I know. But that's funny that's where I knew the name from.
Yeah.
So, those are the characters I mentioned are the ones that I really like. Hexadecimal, I'm on the fence with because, it doesn't matter if I really spoil anything anymore because, I mean, the show's been out for how long now?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just, I guess, in the beginning, yeah, you kind of freaking are terrified of her because she's a nutcase. But yeah. Then I think later on when Glitch Bob comes and heals her, aka makes her face be able to move like a normal person, she really changes and she actually becomes an ally of the mainframers, which I really liked. And then when you see her get her little sprite makeover in season four, Steve?
I think so.
Yeah, season four, I think in Daemon Rising. You see her, like, her little sprite makeover. You like her a lot more, but you tend to like her a lot more when, you know, when she stops trying to, like, you know, kill everybody and, yeah. You know, destroy mainframe. You like her a lot more. And the best line for her in Daemon Rising, get away from my sprite! Because she's loved Bob. Like, she even admits to it that she's loved Bob. Like, she's always loved him, and you know that from, like, episode 3 of Medusa Bug? Just that one scene, and Steve, I think you might remember this.
Yeah.
With the Medusa Bug. Mike, you'll know this too because you said you watched the first six episodes when Bob goes to destroy the Medusa bug and she's watching him in the mirror.
Yeah, that was a little creepy.
Yeah,
what is she like looking at his ass or something?
Yeah.
And she's like, ooh.
Well, and it's like when Megabyte goes after him, sometimes she saves him.
Yeah, because she has that creepy little crush on Bob. She loves him. So, yeah, I have to say that. I mean, the other characters that I could mention, I mean, you have Ray Tracer, you got, like you said, Turbo, and who else? Did I miss anybody else from... No, I think I've gone over everybody, but I mean, Ray Tracer, he really creeped me out. Like, I just, not in, like, I'm scared of him, but, like, creeped out and, like, I'm kind of a little bit disgusted by him because he kind of comes off as a creepy sort of, you know, guy when you first see him in episode 3. Season 3. He's a creeper. And Turbo's an asshole. I'll say that. Turbo's an asshole. He always has been, always will be. Because, I mean, he tries to destroy Mainframe more than one occasion, which really pisses me off. And, I mean, did we even go into the guest stars or no?
No. I mean, because will be going in depth when you guys start the other podcast, so.
Yeah, so I won't say their names, but I will say this for people who are going to be tuning into our podcast. There are a few people who did guest star in some of the episodes, which we will be mentioning in Rebooting Mainframe.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my general thoughts on the characters.
Steve, you want to get into some of the background and stuff like that?
Yes. According to some of the staff, the making and the process of reboot actually began in the 1980s. Like Mike said, the Tron idea must have set in very well with them. But the idea was largely devised when the technology was not yet advanced enough to make the show in the way that they desired. And of course, 3D animation tests began in the 90s. So that's when Reboot got its first detailed look in 91. So the production on the future episodes and the show, of course, aired in 94 after they had produced, you know, enough episodes. And damn, it took them a long time to do so. But yes, at that current time, no other company was doing this. This was revolutionary. And because of them, we have more of the modern 3D that's much more seamless and flawless than what originally started here.
That's true. I mean, what was just so cool, I think, about the show is, like what you said, was how they were utilizing new technology and making a show completely just 3D. You know, not going to hand-drawn, not doing any of the other stuff, but doing just 3D. And I think that's really what made the series unique and really what brought it out into the open and, you know, made it a hit. So, I mean, we can even now get into the setting of the show. The setting is in, basically, you're inside a computer, and a computer system known by the inhabitants as Mainframe. And it was the reason why Mainframe was chosen was because of technological constraints, and it allowed them to use blocky-looking model and mechanical animation. Mainframe is divided into six sectors: Broadway, Kits, Floating Point Park, Beverly Hills, Wall Street, and Getty Prime, also known as G Prime. The names of Mainframe sectors are homages to famous neighborhoods, mostly in New York City or Los Angeles. However, the Kits sector, fun fact here, is actually named for Kitsilano, a neighborhood in Vancouver, which is Mainframe Entertainment's home city. And Getty Prime is a reference to Frank Herbert's Dune. Also, the connected floating island Los Angeles, the twisted and corrupted area where Hexadecimal resides, was, of course, revealed in the first half of season 4 to have been Mainframe's twin sister city.
Yes. very interesting, of course, you know, and it's also kind of cool to see that Gigabyte, you know, destroyed it, which is also Megabyte and Hexadecimal for those that don't know this by now. But yeah, the setting, I was not disappointed with where they went with it. But I was very happy to see the different things that they did with the show. Despite it all being blocky and despite it all being in one centralized location for the most part through the entire series, it still evolved to the point that it wasn't repetitive and boring. So it was very much enjoyable, and I kind of wish that they would go back to this show, which, you know, of course, we'll get into more of that on the actual rebooting mainframe show.
I knew she was up to something. And yet, despite the length and scope of our operation, we still do not know the true nature of the Medusa's power. Until now.
Hey, so now we are going to get into the plot and the premise of Reboot. So basically, the first season of Reboot was highly episodic, and most of the episodes really focused on establishing characters, locations, story elements, and the gigantic game cubes that you see being dropped in most of the episodes of season one. So basically, in terms of the game cubes, when the user loads a game, GameCube drops in a random location in mainframe and turning it into a gamescape. Bob is the guardian of the system. He frequently enters the game, reboots to become a game character, and fights the user's character in order to save the sector. Now, if a user wins a game, sector the cube fell in is destroyed, sprites and binomes caught within it turn into nulls, energy-draining worm-like parasites. Within the series, it's actually never clear if there's a cure or reversal for degrading to a null, even though it's mentioned throughout the whole... It's mentioned actually a couple times throughout season two about how they're working on trying to do that, to find a cure for reversing a null, but it never actually happens. The season also established the characters Hexadecimal and Megabyte, who were viruses, and they were the primary antagonists in most of season one. Steve, you want to get into season two?
Well, the second season, season, was primarily also episodic, but this one actually featured an extended story arc, and it began around the seventh episode with Nullzilla, which reveals as Mike put it earlier, the incestuous ness of Hexadecimal and Megabyte, which they never did that, but it also introduced an external threat to mainframe, the web.
I did not have sexual relations with that computer program.
He did with that virus. But yes, it introduces the web, which was fairly new at the time. Very little people had it, so it was a different area to go into. So of course, a creature or virus enters from the web into mainframe from Hexadecimal's looking glass, which was shattered by Mike the TV. It bonds with her, and mainframe Nulls reacted spontaneously and covered her to form a monster dubbed Nullzilla. It's a bad Japanese jump over with Godzilla. But, It was defeated and neutralized by the protectors of mainframe. The web creature located Megabyte took him over and forced him to merge with Hexadecimal, forming a next-gen supervirus called Gigabyte. And then, of course, Gigabyte was eventually neutralized as well, and then the web creature escaped into the bowels of mainframe. And it, of course, steals energy to stay alive. And basically, this whole season is just chasing web creatures. And eventually ends with Megabyte and Bob kind of in a somewhat quasi-alliance, kind of like season one of Beast Wars in that sense. But Megabyte, of course, betrays Bob, crushes Bob's key tool glitch, and sends him into the web portal before closing it. And thus is the problem that you enter into season three.
Yeah, that was a bitch, because, I mean, he gets, like, just seeing that, just seeing Bob get betrayed. I mean, we all knew that Megabyte was going to do that, but, I mean, oh my god, just the ending of season two was just so heartbreaking for fans of Bob, because you get so used to him, right? And then mm-hmm. see that, and then he's like ripped away from you.
Yeah, the most loved character on the mainframe side, and you're like, what?
You're like, the main character is like no longer in this show right now. What's going on? I mean, oh my god, yeah. And basically with season three, you know, Enzo, young Enzo, is forced to become the guardian of the system, essentially taking on Bob's role. And basically, you know, he has to defend Mainframe from Megabyte and Hexadecimal with Dot and Andrea to side. And basically, I mean, for the first couple, basically in season three, the first couple episodes are you're seeing, you know, Enzo learning how to become a guardian, learning, you know, going to fight games by himself without Dot by his side, and, you know, learning how to be, you know, more of a mature character. And then finally, in season three, episode three, he enters a game which I will describe as a cross between Mortal Kombat and Tekken. Because essentially, Enzo reboots as, I'm going to say, I think he reboots as Scorpion. And basically, they enter the game, they can't win the game, they become trapped in the game, so in order to survive, they change their icons to game sprite mode and ride the game out of Mainframe. And because game time, they accelerate faster when they're in the game, Enzo and Andrea matured a lot faster than they would have inside Mainframe. So now they're adult characters. So we see Enzo adopting the name Matrix, which is actually his surname, and carrying his new weapon named Gun and Bob's damage glitch. And we really see a change in Enzo Matrix and Andrea. Matrix, he's become a hardened character, and he's developed a whole shoot first, ask questions later kind of attitude, and he has a pathological hatred of Megabyte. And Andrea, on the other hand, has turned into a calm and level-headed warrior. And also, we see the romance between Matrix and Andrea, because the two characters make out quite a few times throughout the series, which is very cute, because you always knew they were going to get together. But it's cool just to see that kind of maturity coming forward as the show went on. As the season progresses, I mean, they're basically trying to get home to Mainframe now. So they've been trapped for a while. They've been going through system to system to find a portal to the web to get back to Mainframe. And as the season progresses, they're reunited with Bob and the crew of the Saucy Mare, and they return to Mainframe, which has almost been completely destroyed, obviously, by Megabyte and his forces. So they reunite with Dot, and I have to say, that scene where she reunites with Enzo, oh my god, like, if you're, like, a huge fan of the show, you probably, like me, you probably teared up a little bit. Almost as much as when you see Dot screaming at the end of season, end of episode three, when she's like, Enzo, no! Like, because she's like, oh my god, he lost the game, he's gone. And she thinks he's dead. So that, you see that reunion come forward, you see her reuniting with Glitch Bob. And basically, they reunite, they head to the principal office for one final showdown with Megabyte. Megabyte's defeated by Matrix, but not before Megabyte basically screws them all over and causes the system to crash. And essentially, all the final problems in Mainframe were dealt with by the user, restoring the system, setting everything right, and restoring everything as it was again for our heroes, except we now have a young and older Enzo in the same time frame, because Matrix sorry, Matrix icon was set to game sprite mode. So because of this, he wasn't recognized properly by the system when he rebooted, and it created a replacement of his younger self. Now, I'm going to get into a little bit, I mean, season four, it's essentially dubbed season four, but it's really two made-for-TV movies, because unfortunately, they didn't really get to develop, they didn't really get to continue the series after this. So this is basically the ending to Reboot for now. So we have two movies that were produced in 2001. We have Damon Rising, which addresses the problem the Guardians were facing in season three, which I will address now. Basically, in season three, throughout the travels, we find out that there's a new virus on the web known as Damon, and her virus is spreading to all corners of the web and the net, and also infecting Guardians. And then we also get another movie, My Two Bobs, which brings back a very corroded and mutated Megabyte in the horrible cliffhanger ending. The two movies were actually broken up into 8 episodes in the U.S. run on Cartoon Network's Toonami, which revealed much of Mainframe's history, including the formation of Lost Angles, Bob's arrival in the system, and the origin of Megabyte and Hexadecimal. So initial plans for the fourth season include 3 films broken into 12 episodes, followed by a 13th musical special episode. Although the final 5 were never produced, prompting the series to end with a cliffhanger, which is what I mentioned previously. That's why we have a cliffhanger, because they were never produced. So season 4, the two movies, I have to say, were just amazing. I really enjoyed watching them, but it's a shame that it ended on a cliffhanger, because you're left with what the fuck, basically. So that's that. That basically wraps up.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's because I haven't seen the whole series all the way through. I'm willing to give it a try, but as we said, the first 2 seasons are on Netflix right now here in the U.S. Season 3 and the movies aren't on there, as far as I know.
They will be later on because of that whole deal with Hasbro,
right?
As well, all their other shows. So,
right, yeah. But as of this episode's recording, I've only seen a handful of season 1 and like part of season 2. I just find that the continuity is all over the place. I mean, I know that it was essentially episodic cartoons and everything else, and there's not a really strict continuity, but I don't know, there's so many convoluted issues with this series.
It's not perfect.
When it comes to the characters and everything, I was like, I just can't pay attention. I don't know. I just couldn't really pay that much attention to it.
There's some points I can understand that, because there are some points where it's kind of hard to follow, just because, like some of the storylines may not be up to par with more of an adult thinking, like some of the individual stories themselves, like not the whole series, but some of the individual ones I have a little bit of a difficulty sitting through.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's with any series, you're going to run into that. So,
I mean, you know, I had a huge issue second episode in. The second episode was Enzo as a delivery service, I believe.
Yeah, racing the clock.
Yeah. How the hell does he not know Megabyte's voice? Really? Seriously?
Well, you know, whatever. He's a stupid kid. But it gets
better. You're talking about...
Season 1, episode 2, Race for the Clock.
Racing the clock. He does know. What do you mean? He does know Megabyte's voice. He calls it. What are you talking about? You're talking about he doesn't know that it's a bomb in the mask?
No, he doesn't know that. Well, no, okay. Yeah, now I'm remembering it a little more. Yes, he does know it's Megabyte, but he knows.
He doesn't know what he's delivering.
Right, he doesn't know what he's delivering, but first of all, it's Megabyte.
You shouldn't do anything.
I mean, I'm like, why would you? I don't care if you want to further your business. You don't work with Megabyte, you moron. Oh, God.
Well, that's what I was saying, why I compared him to Carl from The Walking Dead, because he constantly gets himself into trouble, and then essentially because Dot is playing overprotective big sister. No, you are not delivering something for Megabyte. So she makes Bob go and do it, right?
Yeah.
And then Bob essentially almost gets screwed over.
Yeah. Steve, did you have any other thoughts on the overall plot of the series, or any other like episodes you might have liked, or anything like that?
I do like some of the earlier season episodes. My memory is still a little foggy on it. I haven't actually sat down and watched the whole series since I bought it. I've kind of just jumped between episodes, mostly trying to jump between season 3 and season 4 because I'm very unfamiliar with them.
Yeah.
But I do like some of the aspects of the later seasons more so than the earlier seasons, but I think it's because it's more action-driven.
Mm.
And whereas the earlier ones are more just kind of there. But it definitely grows on you as you go along. I am saddened that the 2010 attempt to revive this did not come to pass.
Yes.
And also the later version of it, which, again, we'll get into that more I'm trying to jump over to Future Imperfect. over in Rebooting Mainframe. There's too many shows. But we'll jump more into that detail on an episode of that.
I will say that kind of just jumping off the premise, kind of going on over to into the music. The music for this series and the sound effects were great.
Amazing.
Even though there were a couple of times where I heard a few Mario effects. Very much so.
Yeah, I think I did catch a couple of those.
I think it was Enzo's phone thing that he carries or whatever that is, the communicator or video game. I don't know. He carried something around like the first 4 or 5 episodes.
Yeah, it was like a vid or something, vid viewer or something like that. I can't remember the name of it.
You mean her little PDF thingy that Dot carried around?
Yeah.
Like, that looks like an iPad?
Yeah.
That thing, yeah.
Yeah. But no, the music was epic and awesome, and it really, really made the show for me. Absolutely loved it.
And what better way to get geeked about this show than the intro?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mind format, Guardian.
Yes.
Yes. To mend and defend.
Yeah.
Yes.
So getting into the legacy of the show, I'm going to take the television broadcasts. Reboot was first broadcast on Saturday mornings in Canada on YTV in the United States in 1994 by ABC. Wow, this was on ABC. Holy crap.
Yes, it was.
It was canceled on ABC after the Walt Disney Company purchased the network. Episodes continued to air on Canada. Some episodes from the first and second seasons could still be seen in U.S. when Cluster Television distributed them. During the 1996-1997 season, it would be a year before new episodes aired on YTV due to Mainframe's involvement in the Transformers Beast Wars. Yes. And Shadow Raiders. What the hell is Shadow Raiders?
Shadow Raiders is War Planets. I don't know if you remember that back in the day, those toys, they would go War Planets. It's basically the same essential cast used from Reboot and Beast Wars is in that again, and it's their 1998 series. So about every few years they launched a new show, and it just shows how much more technologically advanced they got since Reboot and Beast Wars.
Yes. Moving on over to the VHS and DVD release, there were a number of VHS tapes. There was the second season was never released, even though Polygram remained the rights to publish the episodes on home video with their deal for the first season. Despite this, in 2000, Mainframe struck a deal with AD Vision to release a third season on DVD spanning 4 volumes. All 16 episodes were published, separated by each story arc of 4 episodes. Really, where it really makes any real difference here is in 2010, Shout Factory announced that it was acquiring the rights to the show and would release the complete series on DVD. That's really all you really need, complete series on DVD in digital formats.
And it rocks.
In 2011, yes, Steve has the complete series set.
I have season 3 and 4, that's all I have.
I have the box set, the 9 DVD set.
Ah, stop rubbing it in.
And it is, the box art on it is cool.
Yes. Steve, you want to talk about the network censorship a bit?
Yes, I will. I will. The show's early jokes at the expense of Board of Standards and Practices came from frustrations encountered by the show's makers by an abundance of script and editing changes that were imposed upon Mainframe before episodes were allowed to air. This is another typical thing that companies or animators like to do to kind of give the finger without doing so.
That's true.
These changes were all aimed at making the show appropriate for kids and to prevent even the slightest appearance of inappropriate content, imitatable violence, or sexuality. That being said, the character Dot was considered too sexualized by BS&P. Wow. BS, yeah, bullshit and people.
Board of Standards and Practices.
I was giving my own acronym.
He's going to give his own little spin on it.
Yes.
Bullshit and people. There we go. Even though she was never one to expose much cleavage, so the animators were forced to make her breasts less curvy and form them into a lumpy monobreast. As lightly referred to by...
So wait a second, Dot is the first animated character to have breast cancer?
No, she's the first one to have a uniboob.
Uniboob.
However, starting with season 3, the monoboob of all adult female characters were replaced with more anatomically correct versions. In another case, the word hockey was banned from all episodes, as in some countries it was supposedly used as vulgar slang term.
Oh, you're joking. I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, it's so stupid. In the episode Talent Night, one scene of Dot giving her brother Enzo a sisterly kiss on the chin was cut due to BS&P's fear of promoting incest, an insinuation which Pearson described as one of the sickest things I've heard.
Yeah, I'm going to get into that a little bit if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
That was just ridiculous. When I didn't even know this until doing research on the show, but honestly, that's sick. I mean, come on. It was his birthday, and she's his older sister, and instead of her, giving him, a kiss on the chin, a sisterly kiss, what does she do? She spins his hat around instead, which looks kind of retarded, which I will
say. That's the thing with
you. Because she doesn't because look how much more intimate she got with Bob than her little brother whose birthday it is. So that was okay for her to be wearing, a sexy, skin-tight red dress with a slit up the side and basically, rubbing up all against Bob, but her giving her little brother a kiss on his birthday is considered incest? it doesn't make any sense. I mean, if I were to compare it, I would say, the way Dot was acting was a lot more seductive than her, with the plan to just give Enzo a kiss on his cheek to say happy birthday. Oh my God, give me a freaking break. Come on.
These network censors, they're freaking retarded on any show that they're involved with.
You've been through this with other shows too, but just that part, oh my God. I mean, because that was an awesome episode. Yeah. That was a way better episode than episode 10, The Great Brain Robbery, which I will not watch ever again. I'm not going to. I know it enough to not have to talk and watch it. That's just crazy. I mean, some of the things, and the whole monoboob thing, give me a break.
Well, they corrected that with Black Arachne and Beast Wars right away.
Well, they also corrected it in later on in season 3 and season 4, because look at Hexadecimal's reboot. Look what Hexadecimal is wearing. Look at her outfit. Look how drastically her outfit got changed. She's wearing a bustier and she looks like a little stripper virus or something, look at the way she's dressed.
She's gonna play with Glitch.
Do you agree with me? Steve, you agree with me?
Oh yeah.
Look at that, and then look at when she becomes a sprite, she's still sexed up, and also, and then even with Dot, in one of, and like in a Tomb Raider kind of game, you see how Doc got sexed up in the Tomb Raider game thing. Like, give me a bloody break. Like, that's what they were concerned about. Yeah. Like, come on.
They're stupid. Terry, you want to go briefly over the revival?
I think Steve's going to take that. Steve,
you
go.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, it basically is for the revival. Rainmaker Income Fund in 2006 bought out Mainframe Entertainment and renamed it Rainmaker Animation, which, in my opinion, since that happened, I haven't quite cared for half the stuff that's come out of that company.
Nah.
And that's also why damn near everybody that was involved with the original Mainframe do not work there anymore and went and started their own companies. But in 2007, Rainmaker was announcing plans to create a trilogy of reboot films with illustrator and animators from, you know, not only Rainmaker, but also the people that worked on Reboot. It was also in conjunction with a website, Zeros to Heroes, which, again, has to do with a couple of the people that were involved with Reboot and doing their own thing at the time. So that got canned, and so they had a development of a Reboot webcomic where fans were able to submit their own art and designs and potentially, you know, end the series. And they did a pitch, and Reboot Arrival was the winning one. Suffice it to say, they had a whole other storyline in there. I've read the comic. It's quite good. So I would recommend going over to Zeros to Heroes to read it. They also had Paradigms Lost, which also has to do with the aftermath of the hunt on Mainframe, showing the devastation and, you know, zombie gnomes and everything else like that. but, yeah, as far as all that's concerned, there was a lot of random stuff back and forth between Rainmaker and the Zeros to Heroes. And then in 2008, a new countdown appeared on the official Reboot website to launch the second installment of, you know, the comic. And there was also, in 2009, not only in addition to the fan site and the comics and everything else, they were going to basically make a new series out of it.
Yeah.
There was a I think 20-second preview trailer on their site, which is now nowhere to be found. I downloaded that at one point. I don't know where I put it. I'm going to have to find it. But they show basically a modern animation, and it says now loading, and it says Guardian version 2.0, and it shows this badass looking Guardian, and I'm like, that's not
Bob. It looks like Turbo.
I'm like, it's not Bob, and yeah,
it's
it did
Turbo.
Look like Turbo, though. So I was kind of like, I wonder, because they, you know, they had that teaser out in 2009, and it was revealed in their animation reel. That's what it was. And yeah, in 2011, Rainmaker basically said their slate of things to do is including a film based on the classic series reboot, but that'll probably never see the light of day, unfortunately.
Yeah.
As much as I would love to see that.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, we got so hyped up for it. I mean, going back to 2010, I mean, it was all over Facebook. It was all over Twitter. It was all over everywhere. And then I think it was just a really big disappointment for the fans, because it was almost like, okay, we're going to get you so hyped up for it. And now, okay, meh, you know, we're not going to go forward with it. And then it wasn't until, I think, later part of last year on Twitter, when they did announce that now they're going to go forward with a revival, like a film franchise based on the classic reboot. I think that's on their agenda now.
Yeah, actually, speaking of that, yeah. There's a guy that looks like Bob on the Rainmaker site.
Oh, really?
Eerily like Bob, and it says in development, and then there's no name, nothing, and it's got some modern-looking...
I like Rainmaker. I mean, don't get me wrong, like, I love Rainmaker, and that's probably because, yes, I will admit to this, they are the ones behind all the Barbie movies, okay? And I know you're gonna say that, but I really like the Barbie movies, and I don't care. I'm 21. I will admit to that, but I do enjoy watching them. I thought they were really well done, and I mean, just I'm excited to see what's gonna happen with Reboot now because it is 2012. So I am really, really hoping, and this is my message on behalf of all the fans out there. Rainmaker, Mainframe Entertainment, whoever is really going to spearhead this, please don't screw this up. Please give the fans what we've waited for God knows how many years. We want to see, we're not so much interested in seeing a whole, you know, remake of the Reboot series. We really want to see you take where you left us off in the end of season 4 with Megabyte and see that, you know, done in animated form, because yes, the comic did resolve all that, but we really need closure because that was not cool, Rainmaker.
They would have see here. Here's well, my problem.
Is... Hold on, I'll let you go ahead, and then I'll.
Here's my problem with them continuing it from where it left off, just from what we've discussed in this episode.
Yeah.
Sadly, Mr. Tony J has left
us. Yeah, I know.
He's passed away. So unless they, I hate to say it, but unless they reboot Megabyte and upgrade him to something else and give him a different voice, I don't want to see someone in that same animation model trying to do a poor impression of Tony J and stuff like that. I'm sure there are very many talented voice actors out there that might be able to do a good Tony J impression, specifically Maurice LaMarche, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if Maurice LaMarche can do Don Adams, I'm sure he can do Tony J. But I don't want them to do it poorly, is really what I'm saying here, if they are going to do it. What were you going to say, Steve?
Well, I was going to say there is a couple ways that they could go about doing that, about rebooting Megabyte. I'm losing it. I almost said Mega Frame and then Mainframe, and just too many megas in there. They could technically evolve the character or mutate the character somewhat, because I mean, obviously technology's changed massively since then, so they have to give them all an overhaul, which would make sense that if they're, you know, they could do upgrading, you know, at the very beginning and kind of bridge the gap that way and then mutate them, and then they could change the voice any way they want. And you know, hell, have David Kay do a, you know, another Megatronish knockoff on it. That would work great.
Well,
because
you
could do that regal British voice, almost Sean Connery, but not using the Megatronish, or even get someone that can imitate Tony J really well. I've heard many good fan impressions that I can't tell the difference. But suffice it to say, I would love to see that come to fruition, but I sincerely doubt that we'll ever see the light of day again.
Yes. So I think we're going to take a quick break, and then we are going to go to the commercials, and we'll come back to close the show after that.
Dreamcast will be back after these messages.
Grab your helmets, because it's time to assemble MASK. The Geekcast Radio Network has launched MASK Mayhem with your hosts Optimus Solo and TFG and Mike. This podcast, covering all 75 episodes of MASK, will feature in-depth analysis of every episode, talk on the toys, and more. MASK Mayhem will run 30 podcast episodes. You can find us at iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com. Get your spectrums ready, as podcasting is the ultimate weapon.
You can now hear the Geekcast Radio Network while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. And when you download Stitcher to hear Geekcast Radio, you'll have a chance to win money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. During registration, hit the promo code box and enter Geekcast Radio, all one word, to get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episodes of the shows will be waiting for you in your favorites. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too. Always available to you on demand, no syncing. It's Stitcher Smart Radio. Don't forget. forget to enter promo code GeekCastRadio when you register.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight. I see a new episode of Tooncast coming this week.
Now back to Tooncast.
All right, we are back. And Steve, final thoughts on Reboot?
Definitely a kick-ass show. I definitely recommend that everybody sees this in some capacity because, let's face it, without this show, there wouldn't be the utter awesomeness that has led to various 3D shows beyond it, including the revival that caused Transformers to go back into the mainstream. And, you know, of course, this shows a very nice look into the world of your PC.
Yeah, Tara, final thoughts?
Final thoughts on Reboot. Just amazing show. And again, just elaborating on what Steve said, without Reboot, we really wouldn't be where we are today with animation. And the cool thing to note about Reboot is that this was done way before even Toy Story came out in theaters. So this was pretty revolutionary for a show. And it's a classic, and I really suggest you watch it. If you like Transformers Beast Wars, if you like kind of old school CGI stuff, you will love Reboot. You'll really enjoy it. It's really a show, I think, if you have young kids, you may want to expose them to this, because it's a classic and everyone needs to watch it. And the cool thing about it is that, yes, you can find it on the internet, you can find it on YouTube, you can even find it on, like we said, Netflix and DVDs and stuff. So it is available for newer audiences to get exposed to it. But yeah, definitely, it's just such an amazing series that I'm so glad I got to grow up with. And before we close this off, I'm just looking forward to rebooting Mainframe, little pun there, in the podcast. It's really just going to be a really incredible journey, and we hope that you will join us for this journey into Mainframe. So with that, yes. That's my thoughts. Just awesome.
For me, I love the voice acting of Tony Jay's Megabyte, amazing villain. For me, I just couldn't get into the series. Maybe it was because I wasn't watching it when it was on originally. I'm very thankful for it, you know, starting up, you know, the new 3D era of animation and everything else like that. So thank you for joining us here on Tooncast Beyond. There are still ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. You can comment on all the different posts. Yes, we will interact with you that way. You can send us email. It's feedback@geekcastradio.com. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. We have new iTunes reviews, of course, if I could find the stupid thing. All right, so Tooncast Beyond got a new review as of April 7th, 2012. Fantastic as always, 5-star reviews from Writing Addict 169. Somehow these guys top themselves with every new podcast they put out. They make any day fly by with tons of laughs and sharing interesting facts from each show. Everyone seems to have great chemistry with each other, and it really makes you wish you were doing the podcast with them. They bring an air of professionalism, and it's fantastic to hear what they think of each show through the eyes of an adult. I cannot wait to see what other shows you guys cover. Keep up the great work. So thank you for that. Very, very awesome. Follow us on Twitter. The show name there is Tooncast Beyond. Also, be sure to follow @GeekCastRadio for all the major updates. Mine is TFG and Mike. Tara, what is your Twitter?
@TaraBlair.
Steve?
Twitter.
Steve!
I said Twitter. SCP-21.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/geekcastradionetwork. We have had a huge increase in activity thanks to my blasts from the past, no matter what Kevin says about doing multiples per day.
Yes.
Yes. call the voicemail line. Tell us or show you leaving the message for and your name. 502-526-5821. If you have a headset or a microphone on your own computer, you can actually go to geekcastradio.com. Look on the right-hand side. There's a little button there that says send voicemail. You can record it directly from your computer that will automatically be emailed to us. We hope you enjoyed this trip back in time here on Tooncast Beyond, and wish you'll join us next time when we'll be once again jumping into the DeLorean for more DeLorean time with the Fleischer Superman cartoons. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Tara the Rising Star,
Steve Megatron Phillips,
and I think we're going to let Bob close the show.
Stay frosty.